Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Oh, yeah. You know, that is the question that we ask each other all day long when it comes to therapy or coaching. We say, hey, do you want to change? I mean, because if you want to change, you have to create an action plan. It doesn't just happen by itself, and unfortunately, it doesn't just happen by intention. You've got to make it happen, and that means creating a plan. And with sexual addiction or partner recovery, there are definitely formulas that you use to make your life better. If you want to know more about those formulas, you can go to my Sex Help with Carol the Coach YouTube channel. Because I talk to addicts and partners alike about what they can do to either change their life, alter their life, transform their life. You know, never feel like you're stuck, because you are never stuck. No matter how bad it gets, no matter how bad a pain you're in, you are never stuck. And I have to admit that when an addict is at his or her lowest moment, it can feel like nothing can change you. But I promise that there's lots of changes that can occur. You just have to figure out how to get to the recovery tools that make a difference in your life. So, all right, you've already found one of them, and this is the show to listen to figure out what do you need to do. I'm not just boasting about the show, but I have experts on that really help you to understand what you're going through and what you need to do to change. For instance, tonight I have Kristen Carey on. She is a part of an incredible movement called Living Truth, and her website is livingtruth.org. She is a CPSAS and an APSATS and APSATS in training. And she has made it her mission to work with partners of sex addicts who have experienced wounding and trauma by the ones that they've loved, by their family, friends, the church, and therapists. And she wants to know what you're dealing with. I mean, clearly she's here to teach us skills to find safe places. Sometimes I know I sound like a broken record because I say it's the addict that carries the shame, but it's the partner that carries the pain, and I really mean that. I'm not saying that addicts don't carry pain. Every time they look at their partner and they're wanting to change and be different, and they watch the person that they love experience so much pain, it's a double whammy. There's no doubt about it. And tonight in my group, we were reminded when a woman was emoting about their anniversary not being good enough. You know, the addict in recovery had done all these things for his partner, for his wife, that he dearly loves. And I mean, he made it a very special anniversary. However, there is no doubt the anniversary in and of itself was a trigger for the partner. You know, this is their first year anniversary, and she is reeling in truth. She's saying, what can I believe? You know he's working hard at this, but what if I'm wrong? What if he's lying? What if he's not being honest? What if he's doing more of the old stuff? And so her mind started to race. Now, and these are the stories I'm making up about this based on my work with partners, but her mind started to race, and as a result, she called him midstream, and she said, where's my flowers? Where's my candy? Where's my jewelry? What's going on? Now, he'd already done lots of things all weekend long. And he felt so discouraged because he thought, wow, I'm really proud of myself. I'm really proud that I've showed her how badly I feel and how much I want to change our love. And so our group, the men's group that I work with, spent the entire session talking to him about the fact that, hey, dude, this is the pain you caused. Now you've got to work on your empathy. And I had a magic wand. Okay, maybe it's not magic, but it's a wand. And I passed it along to all the men in the group and said, if you had one wish for, we'll call him Joe. If you had one wish for Joe, what would you wish him? And this incredible group said things like, I would wish Joe empathy because he's got to remember that he caused this pain and this takes a long, long time to work out. He's got to be patient with her. He's got to do this for days, weeks, months, and years to prove to her that he's the new and improved. And then one man said, I wish you patience because you're going to get discouraged and feel like it's not good enough. But, man, you've got to know that you've got to have patience here because she's still reeling. And what I found from my group of men is that they were reminding him of the trauma that was induced and the pain that he caused. And to hang in there, even though he's doing all the right things, it's going to take a while for her amygdala to settle down. You know, that amygdala is the part of the brain that just kind of goes bonkers. When a partner has trauma, it's like she can't help it. Her brain literally starts racing, and she goes into freeze, flight, or fright. And when that happens, she may look irrational. And that's what I want you to know. If you're an addict, you got to hang with that. You've kind of created a monster, and now you got to deal with it. And she will come down if you continue to do the right things. You go to your 12-step meetings. You work on your recovery. You get filters for your phone and your laptop. You talk to your sponsor. You go to good therapy. Maybe you join a men's group. You go to Bible studies. I mean, there's a whole host of things that you absolutely can do to make this better, but you got to keep working it because when you work it, it works. And that's the beauty of the program, but it doesn't necessarily work on your time. In other words, you have to be patient and you have to know that for each individual, it's a little different. You can't give up. You can't get discouraged. You certainly shouldn't get angry. You've got to do the next right thing. So one of the wishes that I wished him was Teflon. I wanted him to have Teflon so that he didn't feel hurt, that all the things that he had done had not been recognized. I said, let her barbs roll off of you, working on validating, empathizing, and reflecting back how she must feel. Hang in there with her. Spend time with her. Now, if you're an addict and you don't have a partner, you may be thinking, phew, I am so glad that I don't have to deal with that. And it is true. There's less collateral damage for you to deal with. And yet the beauty of having a partner is that they also help to keep you accountable. So all my single guys and women say, you know, it would seem like it'd be more helpful if we wanted to really change for ourselves alone. But what truly adds to the desire to change is when you have loved ones who you recognize have been extremely hurt and you also want to do it for them. And research has proven that addiction oftentimes causes the need for recovery, not just in the person, him or herself, but also because of the partner. In other words, we used to say you can't quit for anybody else but you. But now what we know is it's okay. If your desire, your main desire is to quit for your family, for your wife, for your husband, whoever, and then what we know is it transforms into quitting for you. Doesn't matter why it starts. It absolutely has to end up, you've got to do it for you. But the process of having someone that you love who wants you to be a better man or woman really helps to encourage you to do the next right thing. And, you know, in recovery, we always say, okay, what do you do? Well, what you do is the next right thing. Now, Kristen Keary is going to be talking about the isolation, pain, and humiliation of being the spouse of a sex addict. And those feelings are absolutely incomprehensible unless you've been there yourself. And, you know, you all know that because we've got lots and lots of spouses of sex addicts. So as families and friends and therapists and Christian leaders walk alongside a betrayed spouse, they sometimes can cause further harm. And they do that because they don't recognize that sex addiction is not about sex. It's an intimacy disorder, and the addict must confront and engage deeply in recovery work, where they face their own wounds, their own lies, their own vows, and coping mechanisms that they use to deal with the difficulties of life. You know, I talk about the defense mechanisms that are automatic with an addict: justification, rationalization, minimization, and denial. So as therapists, family, and friends, we need to know and have the proper understanding of how sex addiction is a multidimensional problem and that it affects the spirit, the soul, the body, the heart, the mind, and the will of everybody that is touched by the addict. And partners didn't cause it, they can't control it, and they sure cannot cure it. The three C's that we learned from AA. You didn't cause the problem, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. I mean, today I had a couple, and he said, I have an extremely high sexual drive. And she's been really sick, and I haven't been able to have sex as frequently as I wanted. And luckily, the spouse said, oh, my gosh, it sounds like you're blaming me for this problem. And I promise you, you know, there may be some contributing factors to the problem. Anybody in marriage knows that. You know, I know how to trigger my husband. He knows how to trigger me. I know how to contribute to the problem. He knows how to contribute to mine. And we both know how to make it better. But I guarantee you, as a partner and a spouse of a sex addict, you didn't cause it. You certainly can't control it, and you can't cure it. You can be part of the solution by coming in and talking to skilled therapists about what's going on. You know, if that man had just been talking to any therapist and he said, I got this libido and I just can't seem to control myself, that therapist might even say, well, this is what you need to do. You need to talk to your wife about having more sex. Well, we all know that this isn't about sex. This is about intimacy. This is about previous wounding. This is about habit disorders. This is about different disorders like anxiety, depression, and obsessive compulsive behaviors. It's certainly never been the spouse of an addict that has caused the problem. So we definitely don't want you to feel responsible. And tonight, Kristen Carey is going to be talking about what you can do when you love somebody who's an addict. You know, what's your side of the road? What's their side of the road? What boundaries should you honor for yourself? How can you take care of you? Because it never fails. If you love an addict, you've got to increase your own self-care. It is about you in terms of what you need to do to neutralize the pain and the sadness that you may feel. So I'm excited to be talking to her, especially because she runs a program through the church. And that's a church here in Indianapolis, and she does an amazing job. I've been hearing about her for a long time. So, Kristen, welcome to Sex Help with Carol the Coach.
Thank you, Carol. It's so good to be here with you.
Well, absolutely. You have spearheaded one of the very first spouses groups through the church. And, you know, every 6 months I see more churches understanding this pervasive problem and not blaming the addict or the spouse, but saying, what can we do to support you? So I know this is a movement that's near and dear to your heart and also to mine.
Yes. It's historically been a difficult topic to handle, especially within the church. There's been a lot of misunderstanding about sexual addiction and sexually compulsive behavior and about the role of the partner.
Absolutely. And as I was telling our audience earlier, you know, unfortunately, a lot of professionals and parishioners and therapists don't understand that sexual addiction is not at all about sex. It's about intimacy, and it's about not having the right coping skills, and it's about wounding. So can I ask you a few questions, since you do have so much expertise in working with spouses of sex addicts?
Absolutely.
Now, how did you get involved in the field? Because you are actually an APSETS trainee and a CPSAS. Now, how do you say that?
The CPSAS, you mean what does it stand for?
Yeah.
It stands for Certified Pastoral Sex Addiction Specialist. So that's through the International Association for Certified Sex Addiction Specialists.
Right, and we have a mutual friend who works
diligently
in training churches and helping them to understand what sex addiction is all about. Now, tell me, how did you get involved in this movement?
Well, 11 years ago, my world fell apart when my first marriage ended because of repeated sexual acting out on the part of my first husband. And after many attempts at recovery and attempts at reconciliation, it became clear that was not going to happen. So, of course, at that time, I had no idea that this was going to become my life's work. But it was through a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, a lot of hard work with a therapist who is now APSATS trained and at the time just did an amazing job at coming alongside me, teaching me how to grieve, also eventually helping me see the things that I needed to work on and grow just to become the person that God created me to be in my own life. And she also pointed me to some great resources, one of those being a partners group that she started that I'm still close to women from that group all these years later. And also, I started going to a 12-step program called Al-Anon for family and friends of alcoholics. Part of my story was also growing up with a father who had alcoholism. So I had the incredible experience of working the 12 steps, which has been really completely life-changing for me, but also getting to work with a sponsor in Al-Anon who had been a partner and who had walked this road before me and had so much empathy and insight. So I had a long, hard road of recovery work through all of those means. Eventually, God brought me and my current husband together. He had a history of sexual struggle, which of course freaked me out when we met. I was like, no, thank you. But God had other plans, and over time we were able to see that we were being led to be together. And so that's how we started a ministry called Living Truth, which ministers to addicts, to partners. We also have a passion to help teens, come alongside teens in the struggle for sexual integrity, and also college students. And then we help equip parents to porn-proof their kids. So there's a couple different dimensions that we're involved with, but certainly the aspect of mentoring and facilitating groups for partners is one of my greatest passions, because it's part of my own story. And I do know that somebody can come out of this and be completely, their life can be decimated and never be the same again. Or a person can come out of it, push through that pain, and have a completely new life burst in them and integrate that trauma of betrayal into their greater life story, and God can even use it for good.
Well, you know, I'm so glad that you said that, because I really believe when people come in and they say, we need help restoring our marriage, one of the things that I point out is I don't know that we can actually do restorative work to the marriage that you had, but what I do know is that you can create a new marriage that's bigger and better than it's ever been if you work the tools. And I mean, this leads so many people into such excitement and hope when they really didn't think they'd ever be able to undo the damage. And you and I both know you can't really undo the damage, but you can definitely build on the skills to make your marriage better.
Absolutely. And for some people, that, like for my story, the marriage ended. And yet there's all kinds of reasons now why I understand that was what needed to happen in my story. And there can still be great life that can come out of even the death of a marriage.
Well, I agree with that. And, you know better than so many, that a woman who finds out that her husband has betrayed her, it may look like she freaks out when she discovers that truth. And so many men struggle with this issue. And I don't know if you got to hear the beginning of the show, but certainly in my men's group, the men remind each other, hey, you caused this. And now you've got to sit with a woman who is incredibly in pain and triggered and scared and hypervigilant, and you have to sit with her and work through this with her. You can't expect her to change as quickly as maybe the men have changed. Because those men are so motivated to be different. But for women, they are reeling with their
Absolutely.
Whole life, wondering if their entire life has been an illusion, and what can they believe, and what can't they? Do you see many women that are in that state of shock and disbelief and betrayal?
Absolutely, absolutely. And 69% of partners, upon finding out about their husband's betrayal, experience trauma. And trauma, especially when we are caught completely unaware, it can cause us to act in ways that we would not normally act because we're in fight, flight, or freeze. We're seeking to find relief from what we feel like is a life-threatening situation. And it is life-threatening on many ways, even if we're not having a tiger coming at us to eat us and kill us on the spot. The life of the marriage is at stake. Our financial life may be at stake. Everything about the life we once knew dies. And so it does cause a tremendous amount of panic. And it can last for a really long time for a lot of women.
Well, and you spend a lot of time in your church providing very safe places for women to emote about what they're feeling and to encourage them to know that they're not alone. And I've just heard so many good things about the model that you use. What do you tell women when they say, my gosh, I'm losing my mind, I feel crazy, and I just can't trust anymore?
Well, I certainly validate that because that's true. If you've just found out that your husband has been lying to you about his sexual behavior, then, yeah, you can't trust him. So there is no quick answer. There's no easy way through this. We do use, I don't know if you're familiar, Carol, with Journey to Healing and Joy by Marsha Means. It's a workbook.
Love Marsha and everything she does.
It's amazing. It's an amazing workbook. And so what we tell women as they come to us, and I mean, I have new women inquiring every week about coming to this group that we have at our church. I tell them, you know, this is a process, but I love that this book is called Journey to Healing and Joy. So we sit down and certainly validate that they're freaking out and that they're in panic. But we give them lots of great tools to help them be grounded and to be able to perform their daily tasks that they need to perform. For example, many of these women are moms, and they can't just constantly live in panic. They have to show up for their children. Some of them have to show up for work. So we teach them grounding skills. We teach them self-soothing. We validate the pain. It's really interesting how many women who have not experienced validation for their trauma, their trauma is actually prolonged. And if they experience some validation for some of their knee-jerk reactions and some of their pain, then they can calm down, especially being in the presence of other women who are not just validating with words, but these are women, all the women that lead in our we call it Women in the Battle for our partners group. We all have gone through this ourselves. So for these women who are fresh in the trauma, to sit down with women who have walked the road before them, I recently saw the example of being like a belayer, which is, I'm not a rock climber, but if you're a rock climber and you're listening to this, you know what I mean. Standing there at the bottom and this person's trying to climb up a cliff, and I'm holding, as the belayer, I'm holding the rope. And I'm helping them. I'm looking up ahead, and I'm saying, okay, a little to your left. That's it. You've got it. Okay, now put your foot up to the right. So I'm coaching them. I'm encouraging them. And I've already climbed up the side of this mountain. And so it's coming from a place of like, hey, trust me, I've been here.
Well, that's such a good point, and that's obviously why these groups are so successful, because like you said, the women are validated as well as they realize they aren't crazy, their reactions are normal, anybody else in this circumstance would feel
right.
The exact same things. And, you know, Marsha Means wrote with Barbara Stebbins one of my favorite books, My Sexually Addicted Spouse, and so I recommend that as a Bible. Mending the Shattered Heart and My Sexually Addicted Spouse are my two favorite books to help women to realize that their reactions are very, very normal. Now, I got to ask you, because you talked about resourcing and you talked about grounding, can you give our listening audience one exercise that you recommend that either grounds them or provides a resource for them?
Yes, absolutely. It depends on how worked up a person is. what might be the most effective. And also it depends on their ability to leave the situation. I tell women to, if they're able to, if they get activated by a situation, if they get triggered by a situation and the panic sets in, if they are able to get their body moving, what that can do is it can help get them out of their head and get their blood flowing, get their, if they can go run or if they have a punching bag and they can do some boxing or some kickboxing or walking or riding a bike, any kind of vigorous activity, it can move them out of that being frozen in their head in the trauma and into their bodies, which can be really helpful and sometimes is the only way to burn off some of the cortisol and adrenaline that's being released when their fight, flight, or freeze response has been activated. So one idea about grounding that I just recently read from Sarah Morales, who is another partner coach, is the there's not a tiger in the room exercise, grounding exercise. Have you heard this one, Carol?
Yes, I have. Go ahead, though.
Yeah, so literally, you stand there and you remind yourself when you're triggered, there is not a tiger in the room. I'm not about to be eaten. I'm not going to literally die or be swallowed up by this trauma. It feels like I'm going to die. That literally is what it can feel like when a woman experiences a major trigger or reminder of her trauma, or when she does have a discovery or a disclosure of what's going on with her husband's sexual behavior. But reminding herself, okay, here I am. I'm standing in my room. I see my bed. I'm touching the sheet. And if she can, like, get in touch with her senses, I smell this lavender oil, or I can taste this piece of gum that I'm chewing. I feel this piece of ice in my hand. Just things like that, actually noticing everything in that moment that is in her environment, and literally saying to herself, there is not a tiger in the room. I am not about to be eaten by a tiger. It sounds very elementary and basic.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I love that, because so oftentimes when the trauma gets too great for our listening audience, a woman will tend to disassociate and she'll just kind of leave her body because she can't take the pain. And so being able to access all five of your senses and notice what you're smelling and seeing and feeling and hearing and touching, as well as tasting, helps to bring you back into reality. And then, you know, that tiger in the room, obviously that tiger has always been used for that flight, fright, and freeze moment. And there are so many good trauma specialists, Peter Levine and Vanderkolk, that say, you know, the body keeps score. So not only do you experience that trauma, but you actually store it in your cellular body for the next time. So reminding yourself, there isn't a tiger. This is safe. I'm here. I haven't died, really does a great job at negating what the brain does to keep you safe.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you, you've been doing this work for how long?
Let's see, 2004. So, I'm
yeah,
sorry,
you
not 2004, 2011. So, it's been about, it's going to be 6 years.
Wow. And I know that, you know, you and I, we both realize that well-meaning friends, family, professionals, clergy, parishioners, they don't know what to say. So, you know, what are some verbal responses that people have to the partner that are further wounding, you know, that just exacerbate the problem?
Absolutely. There are a couple kind of general categories that I would put people's knee-jerk responses, and there are certainly people who have really helpful responses, but it's really common to experience unhelpful or further wounding responses. One of those categories would be assigning any kind of blame to the wounded spouse. So, for example, saying, and I'm going to give you a couple quotes that have literally been said to partners that I've collected these quotes to share. One is, you do know you're partially responsible for this situation, right? So assigning blame to that partner when 9 times out of 10, that husband's sexual acting out behavior began long before he ever met his wife. So, and an addiction takes on a life of its own, has nothing to do with what a wife does or doesn't do. A lot of women are, it's assumed that they were not having sex frequently enough with their husband, and that's why he strayed. And so assuming that it's her strayed, and, you know, anything that assigns blame instead of putting the onus on the addict. The three C's, the spouse didn't cause it. She can't cure it, and she can't control it. So that is one category, assigning blame to the spouse. Another category that can be really wounding is any kind of minimizing statement. So things like, you just need to trust him, or you just need to go to marriage counseling. And a lot of these things, you know, come from ignorance. They don't come from malice. But in when there is a marriage problem, a lot of times it'll be assumed you guys need to work on your marriage. Well, I'm sure everybody needs to work on their marriage because marriage is really hard, right? But if there is a sexual addiction issue, sometimes it's better for the addict to work on getting his addiction dealt with and for the partner to stop the bleeding. That's the terminology I use when a woman comes to me and she's like just been shot 100 times in the chest by her husband and is laying there bleeding. It's like, okay, we just got to get your oxygen mask on and stop the bleeding. So to say something like, well, you just need to go to marriage counseling, or you just need to love your husband through this. Anything probably that starts with you just need to ... is going to be further wounding because it's going to be minimizing. And it's also, you can hear that some of these statements also tie blame in to the spouse for what is going on with the addiction.
Well, I
another.
Yeah, and you know, let's face it. As a partner, it's an automatic that you go, "What did I do to deserve this? How did I contribute?"
Absolutely.
And so you're already looking at those issues, and then to hear people say, "You know, well, you know, this took two," is really, it's offensive.
It is very offensive, and it's very damaging to the partner. Another big category in the church that can be very wounding is any kind of an over-spiritualization. And this is hard to tease out, but statements, these are some real statements that partners have been told. One would be, God will change his heart if you pray, believe, and fast. Another one being, surely you can see your husband's sadness over this. It's time to move on and forgive him. We have a lot of work to do here. So rushing the forgiveness process and throwing out the forgiveness card at a partner who doesn't even know the full extent of what her husband has done and what she is being asked to forgive. Another one being, God hates divorce, which is a verse in the Bible but taken out of context and used to, I believe, uphold the institution of marriage above the woman's heart and her soul. So it's valuing an institution over a human being. And it can be used out of context frequently. So those are some of the major areas of wounding statements that I have heard. There's lots more. We don't have time to share them all.
Well,
of course, but
you're exactly right. But now let's look at the other thing, because I'm hoping that partners who are listening will take a piece of paper out and write down some of the verbal responses that would be helpful in healing, so that the next time their friend or their minister or their Bible study leader or their therapist, you know, says the wrong thing, they can assert themselves and say, you know what I'd rather hear? I'd rather hear you say that I need to work on taking care of myself right now because I must be in horrible pain, and I can do that. I am empowered to be able to do something nice for myself so that I neutralize this just a tad bit.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other responses that you hope people would say to the spouse?
Well, you know, one of my favorite things to share to help people understand how to come alongside a partner is Brené Brown's empathy short video on YouTube. If you, you know, get on, for the listeners, if you get on YouTube and you just type in Brené, B-R-E-N-E, Brown, and then empathy, it's a great short video that
Is that the bear? Is there a bear in that video?
Yes, yes, yeah.
I love that video.
It's so great. It's so user-friendly and helps you understand, like, yeah, getting next to the person. So many people are completely freaked out by watching a partner go through this. I lost a couple friendships when I was going through this. I'm sure I hurt people around me because I was so traumatized. It was like I was flailing around, just not knowing what the heck to do, and at times hysterical in my grief. So there were some friends who were not afraid of my pain. And so coming alongside each other, and that's what makes a partners group so powerful. But even I've had family and friends of partners of sex addicts come to me and be like, how can I be helpful? Just even that willingness to learn is so helpful, because that will translate into words and action. Any kind of validation, even something, this is a real quote from a partner of like, hey, what would you want to hear? Or what have people said to you that was helpful? Here it is. You ready? This is really scientific. That freaking sucks. I am so sorry. That's the statement. That's it. Like, this is awful. I can't believe that this is happening. I'm so sorry. That is better than trying to fix it, because you can't fix this.
No, so you're exactly right. That's through empathy to say, this really sucks.
Yeah.
Let the person know that this is horrible, and they feel as bad as, well, they don't feel as bad, but they feel horrible about what's happening to the spouse.
Absolutely. And telling a woman that you have been hurt, your hurt is valid, and you matter. Your heart matters.
Yeah.
So,
well, Kristen, I absolutely agree with you. Now, you talked about the physical ways that a spouse can resource. What are some practical physical ways for churches and family and friends to help the partner of a sex addict? I mean, clearly they can validate. They can say, what do you need from me? What can they do physically? Do they dare touch that person?
Well, you know, when a woman's husband dies, the church comes around her. They have a funeral, a ceremony, a public acknowledgement of mourning. And everybody comes alongside her. She's provided meals. People offer to care for her children. There's a lot of real practical systems in place in a lot of churches to come alongside a grieving person who's lost their spouse. This is like a death, and in some ways so very different. And I don't want to say worse, because you cannot quantify pain. Pain is pain. But, you know, this woman is going to be grieving alone, largely, even if her family and friends around her are shocked and horrified and devastated over what her husband has done. He has betrayed her in a way that he has not betrayed anybody else. So there is a huge loss. So in our church, in our partners group, we actually had a longest night ceremony on December 21st or 22nd, around the longest night of the year. And it was like a public acknowledgement of the grief and the loss and the darkness of this kind of tragedy in our lives, of betrayal trauma. So that's something I thought was really powerful within a partners group. And I've heard of churches doing ceremonies like that, just to acknowledge unspoken losses that are not necessarily usually acknowledged. Another really practical thing is just anything you'd think you would do for a woman who lost her husband to death. For example, gift cards to restaurants, having a meal train organized for that woman, offering to help take care of her children, if somebody feels financially generous, offering to help pay for therapy if she needs help with that, or to help pay for babysitting, any of those really tangible, practical things can be really helpful. Every time a woman in our partners group goes through a therapeutic disclosure process, we all pitch in our Women in the Battle group, and we make a care basket for that woman. And somebody who's going to see her that day gives it to her, and it has all kinds of, like, you know, bath salts and lotion and candles and fuzzy socks, a teddy bear. One woman recently got a pair of pink boxing gloves so she could release her pain and her anger. And so just, you know, a gift like that can be really just something that says, here, you are worth taking care of yourself, and I'm thinking about you.
Yeah, that is amazing. And let me ask you, obviously you're on a grassroots mission to make your church intimacy betrayal responsive. And so you've actually met with the worship team, or you've met with the clergy, and you've said, can we do this?
Actually, no. One of the pastors in my church who oversees life groups, small groups, he has a lot of understanding of emotional health and has done a lot of his own work, and his wife is a trained therapist. He approached my husband and I a little over a year ago and said, we need these groups, and I want you to start them. And so that was, which makes this even more extraordinary that the church actually approached us.
Well, yes, that is such a progressive church. And for anybody in the Indianapolis area, although I've got to tell you, we have 500,000 listeners, and they listen globally. But I do have a following here in Indy, and so that's East 91st Street, is it not?
It's actually not. It's Northview Church, although East 91st, the reason you're thinking of that is because they do have several partners groups at East 91st, but our church and the Women in the Battle group I'm describing is at Northview.
Oh, very good. Well, and Northview just recently hosted a sex addiction training. So I know that they are very progressive in the work that they do. This must make you feel really good that they solicited help from you and they're on top of it and they know the betrayal trauma that can occur from systems and families.
It is really a gift to be a part of a loving, open community. And part of how it did start was that my husband and I have an aversion to small groups, quite honestly, and we have some aversion to church. And I hope I don't get struck by lightning by saying that. Just kidding. But we both feel like, gosh, people just wear their masks at church in general. And I think in society at large, but, you know, we do not, ever since we've both gone through our own recovery process, we just don't do surface. We don't do small talk. We don't do unsafe people in our lives. And so we had a moment a couple years ago where we looked at each other and we both sensed that we needed to start a small group, like in our home, a community group. But if we were going to do that, it needed to be people who would be safe and who would go deep. And so we handpicked about 8 or 9 couples that we had mentored who had gone through sexual addiction recovery processes in different stages, so that everybody would know that this topic of sexual integrity and betrayal trauma is on the table to be discussed in the context of our small group. And out of that small group is how we actually developed the leaders that lead in the women's group and the men's group that my husband leads. So, you know, no church on the planet is filled with really enlightened people about this topic, or people who really get it or are safe. I feel like it has to be grassroots, like you said. It has to start somewhere and be modeled and then be extended to people. Like, hey, there is a place to go where you can be honest and real, because the church at large is not a very safe place
to
deal with sexual integrity or to deal with betrayal.
Well, and so when a woman first finds out, because truly, we may have some listeners tonight that this is their very first show. They have Googled sexual addiction, and they're listening for the very first time. When a woman finds out that her husband is a sex addict, who should she first reach out to for help, in your opinion?
Well, if she can get on the APSATS website, APSATS, which is the Association for Partner of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, that is the first place I would go. If she can't find somebody in that directory, another great place to look is the IACSAS. Do you know that website, Carol?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Are you asking me for it right now?
Yeah, I mean, just for our listeners.
Well, I thought it was the ICASA.org.
It may be. If you Google IACSAS, then that website would come up, and they also have a list of therapists and coaches and pastoral people. So those are two great associations that have trauma-informed specialists. It can be tricky. I mean, when I talk to a woman who cannot find somebody in her area, I will encourage her to ask a few questions of some local therapists, maybe that are recommended by their church or somebody that they know that they can get a referral from, to find out how trauma sensitive a therapist is if I cannot find one through one of these directories.
Well, and what I always tell people to do, on either one of those websites, there are coaches listed. And coaches are a little different than therapists. They've obviously had training in this, but they aren't necessarily mental health therapists. And they do their work via the phone or via Zoom or via Skype. And so if you're in an area that doesn't have a clinician, and, you know, in terms of CSATs, which I'm a CSAT and an APSATS certified therapist, I'm the only CSAT here in Indianapolis. So, you know, you think this is a million and a half strong, and I'm the only CSAT, there's going to be plenty of areas that you might have to travel 3 or 4 hours, and that just is not practical. So you can get on the web, look for coaches, and find out who works, you know, like Marsha Means, she has amazing groups for women via the telephone. And you were referencing her earlier. So go to those websites. And obviously, just again, to reiterate, we're talking about going to websites where people are specially trained to work with partner trauma and partner betrayal. And that is APSATS, APSATS, and IACSAS. Is that correct?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. And if you Google those two organizations, both Kristen and I can attest to the fact that you will get a good professional who knows exactly how to make you feel safe and validate what you're going through and help you to cope with that horrible situation. You know, so many of the clients that I work with, partners, they've discovered it. Their husbands have not come home and confessed it. They've actually discovered it. And so they're in shock because they don't even understand exactly what they've discovered.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as we end the show, Kristen, was there anything else that you would like to encourage sex addicts or their spouses to do to begin to recover from, you know, this disorder?
Well, I don't think anybody can recover alone. My biggest encouragement, even if you cannot find a specialist in your area, if you find somebody that can help you over the phone, that you also gather around you safe people. If you have access to a group in your area, either for sexual addiction or as a partner, a betrayal trauma, that's ideal. Because a lot of people, I think, try to just do this on their own, and it's impossible. You cannot we're wounded in relationship. We must heal in the context of relationship. So that is the first and foremost encouragement. And beyond just talking to a coach over the phone or seeing a therapist, I think we need a community of people around us that can carry us on our stretcher while we're laying there and can bind up our wounds.
Well, that's really good advice. And what you and I both know is that certainly having a professional all to yourself is a wonderful thing. But truly, when you're with like-minded people who have been through the same thing, there is so much wisdom and grace in those kind of groups. And so group therapy, group coaching is an amazing experience, and we know that if one woman does her work, everybody else benefits from that.
That's right. And Carol, I do also offer phone groups. I've done phone groups for women using Marcia's workbook, Journey to Healing and Joy.
Okay, so how can people get a hold of you?
Well, you can email me at Kristin, that's K-R-I-S-T-I-N, @icloud.com, or you can go to our website, which is living-truth.org.
Okay, living-truth.org. Very good.
That's right.
Well, you know, you're my new hero, Kristin, because obviously...
Aww.
You are. I mean, anybody who's been through this and has made it her mission, and I get that it kind of, you wanted it to be your mission, but it also fell in your lap. You felt like God was calling you to this, and even
yes.
if you specifically religious per se, it's definitely been a calling, and you've helped a lot of women, and thank you so much for being part of this movement. I'm so excited that you're part of APSATS. It's the most wonderful group in the world for partners who've been traumatized. So I'm just excited to have you as part of our family.
Thanks, Carol. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely. And you keep me posted. Keep sending me flyers, would you?
I will. I'll do that.
Okay. All right. So, again, I was talking with Kristin Keary, and she is an amazing resource for partners of sex addicts, and she obviously has done a good job of spearheading this situation in the church to create safe places for people to go to be validated and acknowledged and encouraged. So, Kristin, great job. And, you know, that's what this show is all about. We are here to encourage you, whether you're an addict wondering if you'll ever get through this, or a partner wondering if you'll ever stop having panic attacks and doubting yourself. We're here to let you know that, yes, believe it or not, you can end up being stronger, healthier, wiser than you've ever been in your life when you work the recovery tools. And, again, feel free to go to that website, APSATS, A-P-S-A-T-S, and look for tools and materials and resources specifically for you, and feel free to contact Kristin. Obviously, she runs a great group. Marcia Means is an amazing mentor. And you can always go to my YouTube channel, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. You and your spouse can watch the sex addict videos or the spouse videos, and my website, sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com. All right, this is the end of another great show, so listen. As I say at the end, there will only be one of you at all times, and I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. But as Kristin and I both said, don't do it alone. Find safe people who will validate you. And know that there is hope out there. Hope, strength, and recovery. And I'll see you next week.